first of all, the World War II era brings a kind of greater assertiveness on Black America more generally. It raises the contradictions of fighting against racism and for democracy overseas while remaining a second-class citizen back home. And more specifically, there are some developments as well. In particular, by 1946, Georgia's all-white Democratic Party primary had been outlawed by the courts, ruled unconstitutional by the federal courts, which paved the way for sort of an unprecedented voter registration drive among Black Georgians in the spring of 1946, where over 20,000 Atlantans, Black Atlantans, registered to vote for the first time and all of a sudden became a force in local politics. Prior to that time, African Americans had gone to Mayor Hartsfield, William B. Hartsfield, and asked for Negro police. And he's famously quoted when he met one of these delegations, "You're as likely to have Black police as you are Black deacons in the First Baptist Church." But Hartsfield was also a very pragmatic guy, and he could count. And so he said, "Come back when you have 10,000 votes." Well, they had 20,000 votes, or 20,000 new people on the rolls registered in 1946, and Hartsfield began to change his tune.
I was looking at some census figures for Atlanta. In 1940, one-third of the population of Atlanta was Black.
That's right.
How many police officers in 1940 were Black?
Zip.
Zero.
So none. And again, it was a source of great, a real sore point in the Black community for all these reasons. So there had been delegations, including the Reverend Martin Luther King Sr. and other Black leaders asking for Black police, and had been pushed back. But again, the changing realities right after the war changed the game. There was a march on City Hall in March of 1946 for Black police, where, you know, it was one of the larger civil rights demonstrations in quite a long time. And Miami, Florida began to have Black police. Savannah, Georgia, after the same events, had its first Negro police in 1947. And there's this effort to get the first Black police on the force. And eventually, 8 officers were approved. Now, they were among the only college-educated officers on the force. They were segregated in a separate precinct cut out of the Butler Street YMCA off of Auburn Avenue. At first, they could not wear their uniforms at home at night, and they could not arrest white citizens at the beginning of their tenure.
That's an important point. Just because the city of Atlanta decides to hire African-American officers, it doesn't mean the police force is desegregated. So segregation remained.
There properly was the fear that white and Black police officers working under the same roof, there would be lots of friction. There was a significant Ku Klux Klan presence in the police force at that time. The head of the police committee for the city board of aldermen was a member of the Klan. The friction would have been too great. It was only in 1969 the Black and white officers began to actually work together on teams in the city. So a quarter of a century later, practically, you have the first integrated teams of officers working on the force. So again, very circumscribed in a lot of ways. Yet at the same time, you could argue that this constituted the first real crack in the wall of segregation. And it's seen as a red letter day in the Black community. Throngs of people crowd the streets in the Auburn Avenue area to observe these police, something they never thought they would ever see in their lifetime. There were reports of people literally singing free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last, where they saw the Black police officers. You know, so it was really a truly landmark day in the city of Atlanta on this day.
It took over 40 years, though, for Atlanta to have its first Black female chief in 1994.
That's right. And certainly issues with the police continued. In the early 1970s, there were a number of citizens who were killed by members of the Atlanta Police Department, and there was huge protests in the early 1970s about the police. So on the one hand, it was genuinely a red-letter day. And on the other hand, you know, it was a part of a long and continuing unfolding story to the present.
Cliff Kuhn, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.